This is the Morning Magazine for April 4th of 2022. I'm your host, Ariana Proctor. Thank you for joining us here on listener-supported community radio. Coming up on today's program, we'll visit a youth-led Healing Day of Remembrance event that was held over the weekend in Central Boulder. And the City Cast Denver crew takes us on a walking tour around Union Station, the latest flashpoint for policing in the Mile High City. At the bottom of the hour, we'll hear the BBC headlines and then the Hightower Lowdown, followed by a public affair. Today, Sam Fuqua will join Frank Dubofsky to look back on his life's work. Then at 9 a.m., we'll bring you Counterspin, a look at fairness and accuracy in reporting. After that, Doug Gertner will be in the Denver studio for the Morning Sound Alternative. All that is still ahead this morning. But first, these headlines with KGNU's Ellie Stuckrath.
A chart provided by the State Health Department shows the lowest number of patients hospitalized for COVID-19 since March of 2020. As of this week, there are only 84 people hospitalized in the state. Colorado lawmakers will likely pass a record-high $36 billion budget for 2022 to 2023. That's on top of close to $4 billion in federal stimulus money they will also allocate. The proposed budget could create 800 new state government jobs, increase spending on air quality measures, and put $16 million towards residents transitioning out of incarceration. Education and medical services are among other areas to receive significant funding from this proposed state budget. The House will take up the budget this week before sending it to the Senate. The budget could see some changes between the House and Senate, but the majority of the spending plan is already set. Boulder County and property owners are working to begin the debris removal process in the wake of the Marshall Fire. KGNU's Jack Armstrong has more.
Property owners, in cooperation with Boulder County, along with Louisville and Superior, will begin the debris removal process this month. A total of 30 debris removal crews will begin in El Dorado and Louisville, Sagamore, and Original Town in Superior, and then prioritize areas with imminent hazards and those with impending environmental justice concerns. Soon, Boulder County representatives will be emailing property owners within addressed areas to authorize cleanup on their property, as well as authorize the county working directly with the property owners' insurance providers. Currently, property owners can request to walk through their property with representatives to decide how best to handle removal of debris. For more information, email debris@bouldercounty.org. That's debris@bouldercounty.org. For KGNU, I'm Jack Armstrong.
On Sunday, county clerks across the state gathered to stop the spread of disinformation and demand clear evidence of election fraud ahead of upcoming rallies from conspiracy groups. County clerks have reported an unprecedented number of threats and hostility over claims of election security and accuracy. In a press release, the Colorado Community Clerks Association said that Colorado's election system is seen as a national example of how to provide access to voters while ensuring election results are safe and accurate. The Boulder City Council and County Commissioners will consider a countywide library district. This new district would end 100 years of municipal control and establish the library with funding from property taxes rather than sales tax. A property tax increase will most likely be on the ballot in the municipal election this fall if the new library district is formed. The city and county is hosting a virtual public hearing on Tuesday, where the city council will vote afterwards, and the county commission will vote on Thursday. Boulder County Elections, in partnership with Boulder Valley and St. Vrain Valley School Districts, is celebrating their third annual Student Voter Registration Awareness Week starting today. April 4th through 8th, schools are asked to encourage voter registration amongst high school students by displaying educational flyers with registration information, making voting registration easily accessible, hosting registration events, and inviting Boulder County elections to present during classes. You can find more information about resolutions supporting student voter registration and Boulder County's voter registration support for schools at boco.org/hsreginfo. Boulder police arrested a 21-year-old man on Saturday in connection to a person who was found dead with traumatic injuries Friday morning on the 4800 block of Pearl Street. The suspect has been charged with vehicular homicide, a Class 4 felony, and causing an accident involving personal death or personal injury, a Class 3 felony. Police temporarily shut down the streets between 47th and 49th on Friday to investigate the crime scene, which forced the closure of Harvest of Hope Food Pantry for the day. The Boulder County Coroner's Office is still investigating the exact cause of death and identifying the victim and their next of kin. In today's weather, the National Weather Service forecasts sunny skies this week with a high of 65 degrees today and a low of 43. Tomorrow there is a chance for showers with a high of 56 degrees. Sunny skies and highs in the 50s and 60s will return for the rest of the week. Denver should see similar weather with a high of 68 degrees today. Tomorrow has a forecasted high of 61 degrees with a chance of showers and a high wind advisory. Warm weather and sunny skies is expected to follow for the rest of the week. Temperatures are expected to reach 68 degrees today in Fort Collins. Outside the Boulder studios, it's currently 30 degrees. For KGNU, I'm Ellie Stuckrath.
You are listening to The Morning Magazine on KGNU. The Boulder County Farmers Market made its spring comeback this Saturday, drawing throngs of visitors on a beautiful sunny day. Next to the market, the Boulder Museum of Contemporary Art was also bustling. KGNU's Shannon Young shares these sounds from the event on BMOCA's second floor.
Today we're at a healing day of remembrance. This has been created by teenagers in the Boulder area for the entire community, all ages, and it's healing from the King Soopers tragedy that happened last year.
That's Mara Menser, Executive Director of Growing Up Boulder, an organization that helped to coordinate the event.
It's about the year since it's happened, and we realized children and youth didn't have a lot of things that were designed for them to help heal. There's a lot of attention to adults' needs, but not as much our young people's needs. And so the Community Foundation Boulder County contacted us and said, could you look at doing something for and with children and youth? And today is a result of that.
The event featured multiple activity stations for people of all ages, from modeling clay to massage therapy. 16-year-old Grayson DeMarco is one of the students who helped to design the activities.
In the beginning of our meetings, we learned about trauma and more so how to deal with it. And then after that, we had a work day where all of the youth came together and then some of the advisors. And we kind of split up into groups. And then from that, we decided what we wanted to focus on. And some people wanted to focus on kids. And some people wanted to focus on, like, the natural highs and ways to help healing and just other kinds of that and other stuff. But we wanted it to be very inclusive because a lot of what happens or that of what we know that happens is, like, you can go somewhere and then you can talk to somebody. But we wanted to make it more interactive so that everybody felt comfortable coming here and, like, dealing with whatever they wanted to.
The shopping center where the Table Mesa King Soopers is located is an after-school hangout spot for many Fairview students, like Grayson DeMarco. Students were out for spring break when the mass shooting occurred last year, but what happened there has altered the sense of comfort with what had been a common ground gathering spot for local teenagers.
When we first came back, it was definitely a little bit eerie because, like, it's not something that you can just ignore. And even for me, I'm on the Palms team, and the day that it happened, we were at school practicing, and so we were just like, we heard the news that there was a shooting at King Soopers, and then we were just like, the King Soopers, like, right next to our school, and it was just crazy. So it was just a weird feeling because, as you said, it's a hangout spot for Fairview students, and now, even since it's opened up, I feel like people have gotten better, but it's still weird because it's like, you know that there was a shooting there. So it just, like, kind of changed the vibe, I guess.
With high school students, it's become increasingly common over the course of your lifetime to have drills. Are you doing that also within your school and also thinking about it outside of your school and your social spaces?
Yeah, definitely. Like drills with like shootings. Yeah. So yeah, we do them in the beginning of the year and then like repeatedly throughout the year. But it's definitely like not even like an organized thing. Like sometimes I'll just be like thinking to myself, like, if something happened, like, what would I do? Just like randomly, because it's like it could happen, but like you just hope that it doesn't.
That reduction in physical spaces in which kids and youth can feel secure is just one load weighing on young minds. The pandemic disrupted learning opportunities and social interactions for youth in ways that could be hard for older generations to comprehend. Mara Mincer says the sense of loss was something that came up repeatedly in student applications for the Growing Up Boulder program.
Yeah, many kids have just expressed missing out on so many things and so many personal losses. Again, in the application, some of the kids said, I've experienced lots of loss in my life this year, and whether it's a relative passing away from COVID or not being able to be in a musical that I'd been looking forward to since I was a freshman, whatever it is, and they really needed a chance to be with each other and also to give back. I can't get over how much our young people want to give back as a way of healing themselves as well.
This event has been going on. We are at the very tail end of it as things are wrapping up in the second floor of the Boulder Museum of Contemporary Art. Have there been any common themes of discussion that have arisen, topics that have come up again and again throughout the day?
People are just so grateful to have this space. Some were hesitant to come in, but after coming through, they said, I needed that. I needed a place to use art, for instance, for my kids to be able to express their emotions. They said it was just the right way of entering into this discussion so that you can get as emotional or as contained as is comfortable for you. And we also had mental health staff on call here in case there were very large emotions that came up. So it's really been seamless. People can get what they need individually in a community atmosphere today.
And can you tell listeners a bit more about Growing Up Boulder and the type of work that it does and what kind of continuity will Growing Up Boulder give to what's come up today?
So Growing Up Boulder is Boulder's Child and Youth Friendly City Initiative. We were based out of the University of Colorado until last year when we became an independent nonprofit. But what we do essentially is integrate young people's ideas and voices into planning a community that's more sustainable, healthy, and equitable for everyone. And so we're actually about to launch Boulder as the first UNICEF USA child-friendly city in the state of Colorado. And mental health, I have a feeling, is going to be a huge piece of that. Our community will decide what matters most to them in terms of what to focus on. But based on what I've been hearing today and what we know from all the articles and the data, mental health will be a big focus. So I see this as just the beginning of this work. The young people here today have asked if they can continue their leadership. And so, of course, we're going to support that. And the next part of this grant, which is from the Community Foundation of Boulder County, is to tailor some of what we heard today for younger children as well. And we'll be working with BVSD to help support young people throughout the whole district.
Mara Mincer, Executive Director of Growing Up Boulder, thank you so much for speaking with me today.
Thank you for giving me the opportunity.
In the last 6 months, complaints of violence, open drug use, and people sleeping in the public space have become the narrative of Denver's Union Station, painting it as a scene of constant chaos. At the beginning of 2022, Mayor Hancock responded by swarming the place with police. As a result, he said that DPD had made 700 arrests since January. The CityCast Denver crew trekked down to the shiny train and were told that rules forbade audio recordings inside of the privately managed space. So, they took an outside walking tour with Denverite reporter Kyle Harris, who has covered issues at Union Station extensively.
Well, we are outside Union Station in downtown Denver, a place that is frequented by people working down here. There's some folks who live here, and then there are a lot of tourists. It's a gorgeous place. It was built in the 1800s. In some ways, Union Station is kind of the convergence of old Denver and new Denver, right? I mean, really old Denver. It actually is one of Denver's treasures.
Yeah.
And when people talk about this as like Denver's living room, boosters talk about it as like a crown jewel of Denver. I have to say, I kind of agree.
It.
I feel it. I love this place. When it was built, you know, Denver was still coming into its own, which also meant, you know, people had been camping down by the river, right? Cheyenne, mm-hmm. Arapaho had been camping there. They were swept away.
Yeah.
This building is sort of a place-making mission for settler colonialism in some way. And it's like, we are here. This is this kind of magnificent, beautiful Western expansion thing tied to the railroads.
Yeah.
It was built after the Civil War. It's called Union Station for a reason. It's about uniting people, bringing the country together kind of in the wake of a genocide. So it's, to me, it's important to think about both like what unity
historical
and
context.
Sort of a union means, but also, you know, this was a very, in some ways, bleak place.
Yeah. And from one side, but then maybe from the other side, like the business community, this is like their favorite story to tell about Denver is the railroad spur. When early Denverites got together, well, early rich Denverites got together to say, hey, let's build a railroad line down from Cheyenne to Denver and make this the economic center of this new Colorado
Absolutely.
Territory. So it was like pushing out, but also drawing people in
Absolutely.
At the same time. And that's all here too.
Absolutely. That is here too. And I think, you know, the history of camping is one that I think is important when we think about what's happening down here. Because,
yeah.
you know, there were miners who had come out here with this promise of, oh, my God, we're going to the West. We're going to get rich in the West. It's going to be amazing. Many of them found themselves homeless living on the South Platte River. It was already a contested space. Like,
uh-huh.
who is it for? Is it for, you know, this monumental, beautiful building and the wealthy and the people who are making it here in Denver? Is it for people who are struggling and people who had dreams that didn't come true? And again, I think the dreams that didn't come true, that's a huge thing you see down here. The people who are living behind Union Station, behind there's the Union Station neighborhood, right? Which is a relatively recent development filled with a lot of apartments and then some condos. In fact, the Coloradan, which is back there, is one of the first condos to be built in town in the last 10 years. And the people who moved in there were sold this bill. You know, you're moving downtown. You're in this beautiful transit-oriented development. There are restaurants. There's culture. There's all this stuff going mm-hmm. on. And they came in here with huge hopes. And because the places in there are pretty pricey, a lot of them are retirees who are excited to land in Denver and enjoy this beautiful downtown.
Mm-hmm.
And mm-hmm. so there have been some conflicts from the Coloradan, from the people living there, and from people living in the neighborhood who are promised this dream of Denver, and ultimately
and they paid a lot of money
people
for that
living
dream.
Here
and yeah.
people who were poor and people who were accessing many of the social services that are zoned for downtown and have been down here for a while. So again, there's a history of dreams here.
Let's go walk around the back. We've seen the fancy part up front.
Yes.
I want to see the clash.
It's looking pretty fancy this morning. I came in on the A-line. The
oh.
A-line was filled. You hear these horror stories about, oh, the A-line is turned into a squat and whatever. You know, the A-line's just filled with commuters. It's a very calm experience coming into downtown.
Mm-hmm.
Even with all of the hyperbole around the horrors, crime, the lawless hellhole, all of that, this place has been a fairly nice place to come. And I think, I mean, I've lived in other cities. Cities are cities, you
right.
know?
Mm-hmm.
Lots
right.
of people come together in them, and Union Station is no exception. So you have this upstairs, and then downstairs in the bus concourse is where a lot of the crime, the complaints, the heaviness of this space is. And there's no denying that it's a heavy,
yeah.
sad space
right.
yeah.
in some ways.
Kyle, can you quickly catch us up on the story about why Union Station is such a flashpoint right now, like the last few months?
Several months back, Civic Center Park was closed.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
Right. And so Civic Center Park was a place where there were a lot of unhoused people. living for a long time. There was also a pretty active drug trade in Civic Center Park for a long time.
Sure.
When that was closed and sort of moved away, suddenly you had a lot of people trying to figure out where to be in the city. The other piece of that is the Denver Public Library has kind of been one of those public spaces where a whole lot of unhoused folks have been able to spend their days.
It's a public
access
space.
Resources,
right.
Access
rooms.
Social services. And there's been panic about Denver Public Library in the past, too. Well, Denver Public Library Central Branch shut down for a remodel. But when that remodel took place, again, a lot of folks who were spending their days there, who were maybe catching up on sleep they had missed the night before, suddenly were trying to figure out where to go. And as a quasi-public-private space, however we want to think about this, this became kind of a landing point. There were bathrooms here. There are places to charge your phone. Places to sit down, to rest.
Yeah.
From the people I've spoken to, this place feels a lot safer than other places in Denver. So unhoused folks who might be spending the night in the shelter might come here to catch up on sleep, to spend the day and figure out what to do. Inside here, it's been a place where people have come for just some general kind of sense of humanity and to be a part of this city that we love, right? And
Denver's living room.
It's Denver's living room. People chill there.
Hang out in a living room.
Exactly. So downstairs, it's a different world and a different scene. And there's been a sense that there's been an uptick in drug dealing down there and drug use. You know, we're obviously in the middle of an opioid crisis, a synthetic opioid crisis. Overdoses are way up. And downstairs has been described in a couple ways to me. One is, you know, the city's narrative is this is a place where there are drug dealers and drugs and crime being committed. The way users have described this to me is it's a place where they can use from a pretty insecure drug supply. You don't know what you're using these days. And if you overdose, there might be someone nearby to revive you, which is something that has been lacking in the city and is lacking in a lot of cities. So downstairs right now, the way people are describing it to me is that it's kind of a de facto supervised use site. So there are guards there, people have Narcan and Naloxone, they can revive you. People can revive each other and take care of each other. So it's really about safety.
So we're talking about crime, we're talking about the 700 arrests. What is the latest from the mayor on this?
So the mayor's take very explicitly is that what we're seeing here is not a homeless issue. It's not homelessness that we're seeing. What we're seeing is sickness, is a drug crisis, is ultimately, I think all that comes down to crime. From the mayor's perspective, he wants authorities in the city to stop viewing what's going on down here as an issue with homelessness. And he said that very explicitly to me, which I thought was interesting. And a little bit of a different message than I've been hearing from Chief Pazin, who talks a lot about services.
I was going to say, there's this now, the narrative is service-resistant people. So it's not that people are unhoused, it's that they don't want the services provided.
It's service resistance is it's one of those words I think George Orwell would have hated, you know, the sort of government speak. Service resistance to me means that the services that are being offered
are not meeting.
Don't work. They don't work for that person's circumstances. Now, you know, I think most people who talk about service resistance will acknowledge that in the case of someone who's dealing with serious addiction, the services require sobriety, and sobriety is really truly not a medical option for some people. I mean, addiction's addiction, right?
Well, we have solutions. I mean, there's opportunities to serve folks in a better way, but that they're just not being talked about, you know?
There are services available. The city is not lacking in resources. The city has resources. The question is whether those services fit the person. I was talking to Anna at Denver Homeless Out Loud, and the way she put it I thought was so smart, which is she was talking about how if you have size 11 shoes and someone says, well, I'm going to give you shoes, they're size 6, there's nothing you can do with that shoe. I thought that metaphor was really powerful.
Well, Kyle Harris of Denverite, Colorado Public Radio, thanks for joining us on
thanks,
CityCast.
Thanks, Kyle.
Denver.
Thanks for having me.
This is
it's
awesome.
Been a pleasure. I'm a huge, huge fan of yours, so this is nice.
You just heard an excerpt from CityCast Denver, the local Denver daily news podcast. Learn more about subscribing to the podcast at denver.citycast.fm or wherever you get your podcasts.
That's all the time we have for today's Morning Magazine. I've been your host, Ariana Proctor. Special thanks to Ellie Stuckrath, Jack Armstrong, Alexis Kenyon, Shannon Young, and the CityCast Denver crew for their contributions to today's program. If you'd like to comment on something you heard on KGNU, you can leave us a voicemail at 303-447-9911. We play the messages back on Tuesdays during the Morning Magazine. Stay tuned for a commentary from Jim Hightower. And then it's a public affair with Frank Dubofsky. That's just after these news headlines from the BBC.